Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Circle Sanctuary Network Podcasts, brought to you by Circle Sanctuary, one of the oldest nature spirituality churches in the United States, connecting people of nature-centered paths around the world. Join us through the week for a variety of shows discussing various topics, celebrating the divine in all of its forms through nature worship, rituals, education, and building bridges of community.
Welcome to our show. My name is Deborah Rose, and I'm your host on Circle Talk. Circle Talk is one of the shows featured on CSNP, Circle Sanctuary Network Podcast. CSNP has a lineup of rotating shows throughout the month. Mondays feature Lunatic Mondays with host and newly ordained minister Laura Gonzalez, alternating weeks in English and Spanish. It can't be Tuesday without Circle Talk, and I'm the host for this fun show on the first and third Tuesdays of each month. Wednesday features Nature Spirituality with Selena Fox. Are you in the mood for some magic? Then you'll want to tune in on Thursday for Moon Magic with David and Jeanette Ewing. Try them all. Tonight, we're going to catch up with author and Village Witch Byron Ballard. Byron Ballard, B.A. Didn't you like that? F.M.A.
Isn't that better than B.S.?
So funny, is a Western North Carolina native, teacher, folklorist, and writer. She served as a featured speaker and teacher at many conferences, including Pagan Spirit Gathering, Sacred Space Conference, Southeast Wise Women's Herbal Conference, Glasbury Goddess Conference, Heartland, Cyrus Rising, Starwood, Scottish Pagan Foundation Conference, and other gatherings. She's a senior priestess and co-founder of Mother Grove Goddess Temple and the Coalition of Earth Religions here in Asheville, North Carolina. She has written many books, and we're going to talk about them tonight. Dobbs and Ditchwater, Sidity and Madstone, Embrace in Willendorf, A Witch's Way of Loving Your Body, Earthwork, Ceremonies, Entire Time, which I want to talk about because I don't have that one yet, and her newest book, which is coming out, Roots, Branches, and Spirits, The Folkways and Witchery of Appalachia. And it's going to be out in February 2021. For more information or to purchase her book, you can go to myvillagewitch.com. Welcome, Byron.
Hey, y'all. How you doing?
I am doing okay.
You said all those words pretty good. Affinity is hard, though.
Oh, my gosh.
That's
and I've had a crazy day, so I was so excited to be with you tonight. So you are the highlight of my day. So tell us what's been going on. How have things changed for you with COVID and all this virus madness?
Well, I guess like it has been for everybody, I had a monster tour schedule for this year. And I did one thing in February in Wisconsin. And it was wonderful. I had a marvelous time. I live in a little town with a tiny airport, so to get anywhere, I have to, like, change planes two or three times. So I went through three airports twice in about 3 days, and then I land back here at the beginning of March to the news that we've got this horrific virus. And I just thought, great, God, where have I been? Madison, Asheville, Charlotte, oh, my God, what do I have now? So that was the last thing I did. Isn't that bizarre? But a bunch of them have done virtual festivals.
Absolutely.
And that has been so interesting because I'll do a class for a virtual festival and there'll be maybe 10 people, maybe 50 people, but I know I'm probably reaching people that I wouldn't normally reach, people who don't come to festivals because it's expensive or it's, you know, they physically just aren't up for camping on the ground. So it's been really eye-opening how you reach people that you can't touch physically.
Absolutely. And I have attended some in parts of the country where I couldn't travel to. And you're right. It is something that I wouldn't have thought about doing. And also, I talked to one conference event planner who said because people don't have to travel and they can be virtual, they're able to get more speakers and maybe different level speakers because they don't have to travel and they can do it conveniently in their own home. So, yeah, I think that Zoom virtual, I think we'll go back to in-person festivals and gatherings, that Zoom or virtual has a place in our future. What do you think?
Oh, I absolutely do. I think it broadens our connections. It helps us because our communities are so, we are just such the island of misfit toys. And mm-hmm. it's hard for us to get around each other because of the hardships of traveling. And also, we don't necessarily get along with each other very well. I hope that wasn't a spoiler alert for your listeners. So it's really good that you can just kind of log into the Zoom green room or whatever, and you don't actually have to be around people you may not necessarily like or feel like you have much in common with, and still participate. I think we would be wise to offer that option where we can. And I know some festivals, like, I don't know where PSG is going to be the next time it's offered, but some places just don't have good Wi-Fi, so that's going to be
right.
That's going to be a big challenge.
Yeah,
but I think
but
if you've got good
I
Wi-Fi, there's no reason why you can't just broadcast classes, even if you have people record the classes ahead of time before they come.
Mm-hmm. That,
yeah.
And that's
so,
something else
I hope
that
so.
People have talked about, yeah, recording classes, and then people can maybe look at it later. And, again, it just gives exposure and gives more people the ability to participate, which, again, I've attended several, and I've been surprised. And I, what I find is funny is time goes along, I can tell people are learning, and they're getting much smoother and much better. So,
yeah,
it's exciting.
It is. Because there's a scary thing about seeing yourself and hearing yourself. That's weird. It's very weird. So I think, I hope it is the way of the future. And I think it will, if we can manage it, it's going to really broaden what can be offered. And it's going to broaden who can participate, just like you said.
Absolutely. So has this time given you more time to do things I've heard from a lot. Unfortunately, my job has changed in the midst of all this. So my time has went from being more busy, but I have friends who've said that this time, not traveling and seeing friends and going to restaurants and going to movies, has given them more time to do things at home or do things they've wanted to. Have you found that to be the case with you?
I have. And, I have the one book that we talked about coming out in February. I've got another book coming out from Red Wheel Wiser in August, and it's about permaculture and animism. And the beautiful thing about what COVID has done is that I got the opportunity to walk my talk when I was writing that book.
Mm-hmm.
So as I was writing about, here is how someone blessedly just delivered me a truckload of raw cow manure, then that just
mm-hmm.
happened. And I forked that into a compost pile. So in some ways, this book is going to be the most authentic book I've ever written because I actually got to do it as I was writing it. And I wouldn't have done that without COVID.
Fun. That's fun. So you're writing more.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I write all the time. That's kind of the way I process the world is through words. I know I'm doing a lot more, like, online ritual stuff. I don't know if you've seen any of that. For the Goddess Temple, I do online virtual full moons every month. And then for myself, I do dark moon. And there's anywhere from 50 to 150 people who participate in these rituals. And that has been really, really interesting, how you build a community of people that you don't physically see. But I get feedback from folks all the time that they really feel like that group of people that does the dark moons, that feels like their community now. That feels like their coven work. And that's fascinating to me.
Is this public? Can anybody join your ritual?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. In fact, I will put it on, I do it on Facebook Live from my page for the dark moon, since that's what I do. But from the temple's page for full moons. And then we've done holy days for the Wheel of the Year virtually all year.
We did a Samhain ritual.
Fascinating.
That is. And I'm very curious because my group, we've done classes, but we really haven't done rituals online because I've attended a few. And they weren't very good. I mean, they were okay. Mm. They were just more awkward. I mean, it's more since they weren't spiritual. They just seemed awkward. So that is really exciting. So is that something that came naturally to you, or did you have to practice, or have you always been doing virtual rituals?
Here's the thing that everybody should know about me. That MFA at the end of my name is a Master of Fine Arts in Theater. So I've been doing theater since I was 13 or 14. So the idea of just using my voice rather than my body to do ritual comes real. It's like radio ritual almost. So it comes very naturally to me. Plus, I have a trained voice, so I can kind of get stuff across that way. But the other thing that I do, and I'm not saying I'm the be-all and end-all, is that I just set up an altar and I focus the phone on the altar. So it's not that awkward thing of moving from person to person and maybe one person is really strong but the next person is scared or whatever. I just focus everything directly on an altar. And if it's me or if it's me and the other two priestesses from the temple, you just hear our voices. And I think it's easier that way for people to kind of fall into being in ritual. I've had people say, because I'll say, rise as you are willing and able and turn with me now to the north. And I've had so many people say that they couldn't stop themselves from doing this. Certainly nobody can judge you. Nobody can see you. But they will, as soon as they hear that, they stand up and they turn to the north and they, you know, do their pent or whatever, however they acknowledge this direction.
Absolutely.
So it's been fun.
That's really, I have never even thought, and again, I have probably attended a half a dozen Zoom rituals, and I've not attended one like that. That is a fabulous idea.
Yeah,
so I encourage your listeners,
we'll do full moon in a couple of weeks. Come and do full moon with us.
Oh, yeah, that sounds really, really, that sounds fun. So, and I will say, I know something else you've been doing because I've been listening to it. I'm not sure how I came across it, but I love your Weird Mountain Gals podcast. That is fun.
Oh my gosh. We have so much fun doing it.
Tell me.
For the people that are listening, it's Weird, W-Y-R-D, Mountain Gals. And Alicia is a buddy of mine, and we had done a couple of little projects together. And she said, I want to do a podcast. And I went, oh, God, but there's so much trouble. And she said, they're really not. It's really not. The technology is not hard. So she worked out, bless her, she worked out all of the tech stuff. And she just plugs me in. I just sit 10 feet away from her usually. And we just start talking, and it's a riff on, there were all these bluegrass bands in the 40s and 50s that were named after their location. So there was one called the Clinch Mountain Boys. So we're the Weird Mountain Girls.
Oh, that's
but
so
we have a great
fun.
Time. And we put in a lot of folkways and gossip, and there's just not much to it, but it's I think it's entertaining. We hear that it is.
It is fun. Well, and you share personal things, like you slept late to 10 a.m.
You would not believe
that
the people have busted
cute.
My chops over that.
Oh,
what time did you get up
God.
Today, Byron?
That is so funny. No, it is. It's really, really, it's really fun. How often, and it's through Facebook. I found that you go through Facebook. And how often do you do it?
We put a podcast out once a week on Sunday evenings. But the last
so
2 weeks
cool.
of October, we did something every night, ghost stories and boogers and saints and stuff like that. We just get started and we can't stop. Like,
that
I don't have to
so
go
fun.
And record anything tomorrow because we recorded 4 shows the last time we met.
Oh, my gosh. So, talk to me. You're kind of known for the term tower time. And I am looking at your book, Earthwork, Ceremonies, and Tower Time. Talk to me about that because I'm a big fan and I have many of your books, but I'm going to have to get this one as soon as we get off air. So tell me about that and tell me about tower time.
Earthwork was a book that was 15 years in the making. Because I had, and it's so nice to be able to talk to you about this because you won't immediately call and have me put in a straitjacket. But about almost 20 years ago, maybe more, I had this waking vision. And it's based on the tarot card, the Tower. And I've been reading cards since I was 12. So I've been reading cards a good long time, 52 years. So the language of tarot is a visual language that's easy for me. But the vision I had is that we are living in the times where these top-down, hierarchical, patriarchal systems are collapsing again. And we go through that periodically throughout human history. We have hit those points. But the problem, and what I keep saying again and again, is that it's not who's on top of the pyramid. It's the fact that it's a top-down pyramid. That's the problem. The structure is the problem. Because I get a lot of grief. I mean, I'm the priestess at a goddess temple, so I get a lot of grief of that. Well, he used the word patriarchy, so you must hate men. Well, trust me, I don't hate men. I like men very much, most of them. Some of them not so much, but most of them. Anyway. So I refer to it as calling the devil by its oldest name, patriarchy. And there have been times, like during the age of so-called enlightenment, we started seeing these systems crumbling again, but we shored them up because that's what we know. And what we do all the time is we see crumbling systems and we go, wait, if we can just get rid of that jackass who's on the top who's ruining everything and replace that with somebody who's smart and ethical and all of that, then it's all going to be fine. But the problem, again, is the structure. So this vision was all about how the tower is falling. And it's going to recalibrate as it falls, and we see that all the time now, with suddenly education is at rock bottom. Okay, no, I think we've worked out a way to do education. No, education's falling again. And it's every system that we can imagine in the West. It's government. Heaven knows government is in really bad shape. Medicine, healthcare, education, religion. I was listening to a news piece today about the Boy Scouts. Whoever thought the Boy Scouts would disappear? They're going to have to file bankruptcy because of the abuse scandal.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So we're seeing all of these systems that we always figured would always be there because they've been there for a long, long time. But what the vision was about is that time now for us to say no more of that, no more top-down stuff. And I refer to it as circles on the ground. So it was time for us when I first started working on this to start figuring out how leadership looks in a world when it's not top-down. How does food distribution and food production look like if you don't have to do a huge agribusiness, you don't have to monocrop 10,000 acres of corn? How does that how does that look, and how do we personally participate in that and not wait for someone who's a CEO or a big name to figure it out for us. So I wrote about it for a long time, and then finally a friend of mine said, you need to write a book of this, and you need to give people some ideas of what they can do. And so Earthworks, the first half of it, is all essays about what I believe is happening globally.
Mm-hmm.
And the second half of the book is called Berms, and it's all ceremonies that you can do by yourself or with a small group or with a huge group to ritualize what it is we're doing. Because humans are ritual creatures. We love to ritualize the least little thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a chance to ritualize what you're going through and give it extra significance. But somehow having a really crappy 6 months is less important than going through ordeal work or going through a rite of passage. Don't you think?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I will definitely have to get that. That sounds very, very interesting. And ironically, very apropos for this time, I mean, what we're going through now. So
it's been funny in the past year, I guess, or since COVID really hit, people have been saying, who could possibly have predicted such a crazy thing happening? It's like, I wrote a book about it in 2018.
Exactly.
I wrote a book. I knew. Lots of us knew. You just didn't listen to us.
Absolutely. So, yeah, it is. It is. Things, you definitely can feel things are changing. So, yeah. So, and that brings me up to something that's interesting. I have a lot of people who reach out to me. What are some things that magical folk can do to protect themselves, help themselves, deal with the stress and all the changes that are going on right now?
You are not going to like what I'm about to say, because nobody does.
Okay.
But magical people can do the damn magical work. Then quit whining and get to work.
Absolutely.
I cannot tell you, if I had $1,000 for every person who looked at me and said, but I just can't ground. And my response is always, well, then you have to try harder until you can, because it's important. Because you're magical.
Absolutely.
If you would consider yourself a magic worker, then here are the skills you need to have. And yes, for some people, grounding is extremely hard because they're like triple air signs and their personal history has never rewarded them for grounding. I mean, there's any number of reasons. So I tell people, go back to the basics of practicing magic. Figure out how to ground
yourself.
That's
a good suggestion.
Figure out how to pull energy out of the planet and out of the moon and the stars and everything else, so you're not using your personal life force to do magic. Learn how to get your damn shields up, like Star Trek up. Like, you can't do a 15-minute guided meditation with 12 pieces of rose quartz in your pocket. If something is coming at you, it needs to be shields up, and you need to do it with 3 kegels. It's like bump, 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 shields up. So what I tell magic workers all the time is you just have to practice magic all the time, every day, every day. And you can't go, oh, I'm too busy to practice magic. Well, if you're too busy to practice magic, then you're probably not a magic worker. And you
Absolutely.
Should just give it up and wear lots of black lots of black clothes and lots of jewelry with bones, and let it be an aesthetic for you. But don't say you're a magic worker if you are too lazy to practice magic.
And this will probably sound weird to you, but for me, grounding in shielding, mostly grounding, is like a muscle. It's like the more I do it, the much easier it becomes. And so if you don't make it part of your daily or part of your practice to do, it just becomes, you know, I've done many types of different meditations, but the one that I was introduced to first and probably have done the most is where you become a tree, where you do the roots and the ground and you be branches. I can be probably in the middle of a protest and become a tree if I have to, because I've done it mm-hmm. for so long. It's kind of what I've done, and it's just my body. It's almost like my body responds very quickly to that suggestion. So that's what I tell people. They need to practice. You can't do it a couple times and expect to be comfortable.
No. And that's the same grounding technique I use, where the little roots come out of the bottoms of your feet, and then, you know, within 60 seconds, you're a mighty oak tree as tall as the Himalayas. And, man,
absolutely.
that will get you focused.
Absolutely.
But the other thing
tip my nose. But go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, in fact, we were talking about grounding, and I could feel my heels digging in. And I'm lying
that's
on a bed.
Funny.
But I could feel my heels digging in like, okay, I'm grounding now. Thanks, Deborah.
Yeah, that's it. My body responds really quickly. That is something that's something I've done for decades, and it's just easy for me. So that's awesome. That's funny that you say that, because my CUPS group, about every 2 or 3 years, I'll do a series of like 101 or basics, and you think that people wouldn't come, and I get so many experienced practitioners who come because it says it helps them refresh and remember
mm-hmm.
what they're supposed to be doing.
It's like that in Buddhist practice, they talk about beginner's mind, that you forget all the things that you've spent 30 years practicing, and you just go in fresh. And you inevitably hear something that you learned 30 years ago and dropped by the wayside, but now it's applicable either to your practice or your personal life or whatever. I also tell pagans, if you are a deist of any kind,
mm-hmm.
and even if you're not a deist, you have ancestries, you need to work with the spirit beings around. You need to bulk up your animus practice, because the gods are not just convenient t-shirt designs. They are
mm-hmm.
not just that cool thing that you have on the sarong that you wear at a festival.
Mm-hmm.
So if you believe, mm-hmm. whether you believe they're archetypes or you believe they are, as I do, non-corporeal energy beings. In other
mm-hmm.
words, I think the gods are really, really real.
Mm-hmm.
However you see them, if you are a person who works with the divines and or serves divines or both, then do that practice. Don't just have a tattoo of a divine on your forearm and then ignore them the rest of the time. How silly is that?
Absolutely. Like I tell
it's
people, if somebody I don't know very well and haven't talked to in a year and they call me and ask me a favor, I'm like, I don't know you. Why are you calling me? Why do we think? I mean, absolutely. You need to have a relationship, because they will come and they will talk.
Mm-hmm. And I tell you what, you get in trouble, and if you have a decent relationship with the divines, if you serve the divines rather than wear them on your charm bracelets, if you serve them, then I'm not going to say always, because sometimes the answer is that you don't get to do this. Sometimes the answer is no. But if
mm-hmm.
you serve them and have a relationship with them, just like you said, then they are someone you can come to. But, man, your ancestors, because whether you believe in gods or not, you don't have to believe in ancestors.
Right.
They're here. Everybody's got those. And people are – I do a class on practical ancestor veneration. And that was stolen from us in the West. It really was. It was just stripped out from us. And so it's hard now for a lot of us to figure out, well, I mean, am I worshiping my ancestors? And in my worldview, you're just reconnecting that relationship. Because whether you knew your fourth great-grandmother or not,
mm-hmm.
you still have that relationship. And as you renew that, you go to them for the things that you need to go to them for. Like right now, the world is hard, but it's not as hard as if you were a Jew in 1939 Berlin.
Absolutely.
And it's not hard
Absolutely.
Than if you were a homesteader during the Dust Bowl. So talk to your ancestors and find out, and they are going to tell you, pray you'll work hard, you look after your family, you look after the people that you love. And that doesn't change from generation to generation. But still talk to your ancestors. Don't take my word for it.
That's good advice.
You don't have the kind of ancestors that go, really? Are you that kind of loser? Really? You had wonderful opportunities and you never did anything with them? What the hell was wrong with you? Some people have those kind of ancestors, and they're kind of good for us, too. You know, they kick our butts around and remind us, oh, yeah, was I feeling a little self-indulgent? Was I whining? Oh, yeah, maybe I was a little bit.
How did you start off in this path? Did you grow up earth-centered or pagan or interested in goddess?
I grew up unchurched, which is what we call it around here. I think my father or my mother, Juan, had a big fight with the Methodist preacher, and they never found another church home, as we say around here. So my brother and I grew up unchurched, so I've never been baptized. I never was a Christian. And that helped. I also grew up in the country with parents who were pretty, I think probably the word would be negligent now, but they were pretty free about just letting us go out the door and come back at dark.
Mm-hmm.
And we just ran wild, and we lived in the country, so I was climbing trees and hiking and playing with cows and all that stuff. So all of that contributed to me being an animist. Basically, I mean, I didn't have that kind of language for it, but that I understood that everything around me was sentient, that the trees were not any less smart than the chickens. Oh, heaven knows, more smart than chickens. Mm-hmm. And that rocks had a life about them. And it was something that just came to me growing up in the country that way. But the witch thing was like a weird family thing. So that my, as far back as we go in oral history, is to my great-great-grandmother. And some of the women in my mother's line had these interesting abilities, like they hands-on healing and removing warts, blowing the fire out of burns. My grandmother had what we would now call precognitive dreaming. And it was understood, at least I was told when I was about 10, that when I became a woman, when I got my period for the first time, I would be given a gift. And the understanding was not that it would be a, you know, ruby earrings or anything like that, but that I would get one of those ancestral gifts. And so when my daughter was about 10, I told her the same thing. And I hope that if she ever has a daughter, she will do the same thing. And so it's this interesting line of practice and belief that's not necessarily tied to religion, because the ancestors on that side of the family were all Methodists. It's not like they were practicing some remnant pagan religion from long ago. I mean, you might think Methodists are that, but that's not true. They are not a remnant of the pagan religion. Mm-hmm. They might like to think so, though. So that's how that happened, and I was known as a witch from fourth grade on, and my daughter has always known that. In fact, she got in trouble at preschool. I came to pick her up from preschool, and the teacher said, "Okay, now I have to tell you that that she called you something today, and we explained that was a nice thing to call your mommy." I said, "What did she call me?" And she said, "She called you a witch." And I went, "Okay, we should sit down because I need to talk to you now." But what came out of that is that I developed a little, like a booklet called Back to the Garden, a handbook for new pagans and their families and friends. Every time, because she was in public school all the way through, so with the new teacher, whoever the new teacher was, I handed them a copy of that book, and they said, "You got any questions, please don't hesitate to ask." And I stopped doing that in high school because that would have been embarrassing for her. But, yeah, so she's a cradle Wiccan.
How was the response to that from the teachers?
It was it was always good. I was trying to think of there any moment where somebody got on their high horse, but they didn't. It was all fine.
Because you're kind of in the Bible Belt, aren't you? I mean, it's typically, I mean, you're in the South. Isn't it typically pretty spiritual?
It is very spiritual. And we are in Asheville, which is kind of a blue oasis in a basically red region. Has always been sort of an arts and crafts center. So it's a little different here, but you step right out of the city limits and you're in the county. And then people are they are certainly, as you said, very religious, very spiritual. But there's a huge cultural piece that's important too. I was on a committee with a man who is a preacher in a local county, and it was like this big interfaith committee. And he is still Baptist. He's Baptist. And there was a Baptist preacher from in town who said something very sort of liberal and progressive and whatever. And I was sitting by the preacher from this other county because some of my ancestors are buried in his churchyard. So we all sat together and talked about, I'd say, so how's my great-grandpa doing? He's good. We mowed around there the other day. And so he got so angry at what this other Baptist minister was saying that he stood up and he pointed down at the top of my head and he said, I've got more in common with this witch right here than I do with my brother Baptist. So the cultural piece really can't be negated. And there are ways of working around that cultural piece and working with that cultural piece. But the way to do that is not by playing Lady Bountiful, saying, well, I'm from New York, so I understand how this is, because that won't get you very far here. Did I answer that question?
Absolutely. So so you've always, I'm just so curious, you've always practiced folk magic and folk ways, and that is, has that always been your path?
No, I mean, I'm a Wiccan high priestess. So my magical practice is very folkloric. And certainly my farming practice and all that is all based in the folk ways of my ancestors and my culture. But my religious path has all, I became Wiccan in 1975. So I have been Wiccan. So that's my religious path. And somehow I keep those two things remarkably separate. Does that make sense?
That's interesting. Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, that is interesting.
So that as a folkloric practitioner, I rarely do any kind of ritual. I do work. I do what I call a job of work. But as a Wiccan high priestess, yeah, I can do all your rites of passage, baby. I can dance with you naked under the moon. I can do all that stuff.
That is fun.
I can call the guardians of the watchtower of the north. And I love them equally.
Yeah, that is interesting. I had not known that. That, I mean, that is very different, separate paths. So that's really, really, I mean, that's really interesting.
Well, for me, it feels very different. In fact, one of the books that I'm sketching out right now is a guide to modern goddess veneration.
Because,
I mean, we've got a 14-year-old goddess temple right here in Asheville, North Carolina, catty corner across the street from the First Baptist Church.
Is that interesting?
And I think there are a lot of people who don't understand how it is you do that anymore.
Did you get any pushback when you started that?
Say that again?
Did you get any pushback when you started your temple?
You know
the
what?
Local folks?
I was already doing interfaith work. I'd been doing interfaith work for probably 15 years before we started the temple. And
so that you were known.
Yeah, and so when we announced the birth of this goddess temple in Asheville, North Carolina, I got phone calls from a handful of clergy people in different denominations. And the first one was from my friend, the liberal Baptist preacher. And he said, you are going to build a building. Okay, I need to let you know when you're ready to do that, come and talk to our insurance guy because he really understands how it is you insure a building that isn't used, you know, all the time. Another, an Episcopal priest called me and he said, oh, sweet Jesus, really, you're going to build a building? I want to tell you, we spent $1 million on the roof last year. So I want you to think hard before you think about building a building because it's just a money. So all of these clergy folk were saying, you let us know how we can help you and we will, you know, we'll get you our guy. That was all wonderful. The pushback we got was from the pagan community. And their problem was, well, you're doing a goddess temple. Well, what about the god? And my response always was, if you are called, we were called, there were eight of us, and we were literally called to build a temple. And I say, when you are called to build a temple for the divine masculine, I will do what I can to help you do that, but that's not what this is. And I got so much pushback, primarily from men, about it just being a goddess temple, just a goddess temple. Isn't that interesting?
That is interesting. And I'll tell you something that touched me about what you were saying, that I think because of your years of interfaith work and because of the level of professionalism that you bring, is that it sounded like the different faith leaders were treating you as an equal. And that's very, very nice. And that just helps all of our causes. When we have someone who's seen in the religious world as an equal to other faiths, that just helps all of us.
It does.
Open that
it
door.
It absolutely does. Yeah, I've been doing this a long time. I go to festivals and people will say, oh, you're so lucky to have such a strong community. And I go, look, it wasn't luck. It took us 25 years of hard graft. We built this thing brick by brick, and before that, we made the bricks. So anybody
Absolutely.
Can have a pagan community, but you just got to be willing to put in the hard work, and not a lot of people are, because it's hard.
It is hard, and it takes time. And it's not something that you can do for a little while and let it go. You have to be committed.
Yeah.
So you know, kudos to you, though. I mean, it's people like you. I just really believe it helps all of us because you start to change minds. And, you know, interfaith is such important work. And, again, that's something that I have a little bit of myself, and I've seen people change, and I'm always excited when someone who was not necessarily, I've never encountered anybody hostile. I've encountered a lot of, and it tends to be one denomination of, and usually men, who are more condescending than they are mean. And it's always interesting to me that as they get to know you and time goes on, that they come back and they start to ask questions. And so I think that's always very exciting when all of a sudden they want to understand why you believe what you believe. So, and again, it just opens the door.
Well, because then they start to see it as a belief system.
Right.
And as a religion, rather than we just dance around naked under the moon, that we have divines, we have history, we have liturgy, some of us, you know, when they, it looks like we take our work seriously, maybe not ourselves, but we take our work seriously, then they take us seriously. I remember being in yet another interfaith meeting, and we were doing that appreciative inquiry. I don't know if you've ever done that with your cups group, where different people from different denominations and religions sit at a table, and you have a series of questions that you answer. And it was about the nature of the divine. And I remember looking out the window, and there was a tree, and just saying, I don't even know what I said about about the interconnectedness, that not only am I connected to that tree, I am that tree. And I talked about animism, all that stuff. And when I kind of came back to myself and smiled and I said, yep, I think I'm done. The retired Episcopal priest across from me pointed and he said, I want what you have. And there's something about that connection that they don't have necessarily.
Yes, absolutely. So, well, and again, most of us, there are fundamental pagans, but most of us don't share a faith that we think there's just one way. And because one way is a really narrow street. And so it allows us the freedom to explore and to see what is revealed to us that a lot of people don't get to have the freedom to be able to do that.
Yeah. Well, because we have a lot more freedom than a lot of religions do. We've given ourselves that. Like, nobody is the boss of me.
Absolutely.
It's one of the most disturbing things about modern paganism, I find, is that there are a lot of people who want to codify it and go, well, if you don't do this, you're not that. If you don't do this, you're not that. And it's always been about your personal gnosis and your personal connection to the divine.
Yes, there are many fundamental pagans who think they're crazy.
Yes.
It's like, that's just human. That's just, unfortunately, human nature. So it doesn't matter. But I would find that a lot of people who are drawn to this type of spiritual path different way and are looking for more freedom and freedom to explore and to see, you know, what things mean for them. So I think freedom's the big thing for me to be able to explore and to that, you know, my practice is a little different than your practice. And you know what? That is okay. So
there's a large interfaith organization called the United Religions Initiative. And they are all about you stand in your personal authority as someone who practices the religion or the faith system that you practice. And you don't proselytize other people. You just say, hey, this is what we do. And this is what we eat. And look at my nice clothes. And so there's never a sense of creating sort of a one world religion. It's like a wonderful box of crayons. And everybody is different, but we all can just share in what it is that we love and what it is that moves and touches us.
Yeah,
without making everybody else do the same thing.
Yeah, I had that experience a little bit when my partner and I, we attended the Parliament of the World's Religions. And,
how wonderful.
Yeah, and it made me realize there's so many different faiths out there. And I got to go to a Shinto temple and it made me realize there's probably a lot more things that we have alike than are different. If you take the names of a god or in gods and the words, if you just look at the things we do, we sing, we candles and incense and all these different things. It was really, I felt like that. It felt that everybody, we were connected and we just didn't know it.
Yeah. Yeah.
As people of faith. Yeah. It was really fun.
I think
so what's next
if you can, I encourage everybody to do interfaith work if they can. There's some places where that's just not a thing. We're having trouble here now. We have a kind of a interfaith Facebook page thing, but we don't meet like we used to meet and share information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
It's a good thing.
I've had some really good experiences. Like I said, I had early on an experience and I learned, I was on a panel on death and dying and, I had basically somebody talk over me. Every time I went to talk, they would talk over me and they were, you know, very, very proud of their own religion. And it's funny. So I've learned how to work in that, but again, it's valuable because again, after I've done it for a while, I've had then people come up to me and say, you know, I'm, you know, Episcopal or I'm Catholic or whatever, but can you explain to me? And again, questions, you know, are the first bridge to understanding.
Yeah, I'm a person who is curious and I read a lot of different kinds of things. And I was talking to a Catholic priest and we were talking about the big thing at that time was Celtic Christianity. And I said, mm-hmm. Oh, Celtic Christianity, you mean basically Celtic paganism with some Jesus? And they were like, no,
exactly.
No, no. I said, look at the Pelagian heresies. Look at the writing of Pelagius. And the priest looked at me and he said, you know about the Pelagian heresies? I said, yes, of course I've read Pelagius. What educated person has not read Pelagius? Oh.
That's funny.
Yeah. So it's always good to trot out what little education you may have, in my case.
That's so fun.
Mm.
So what's next for you?
Ooh. Well, I'm working on a book right now that is, it's a sociological treatise on the issues affecting the region of Southern Appalachia, Middle and Southern Appalachia. It's about the opioid crisis. It's about jobs. It's just looking at the region itself and trying to come up with some thoughts about where we go from here. Not magical in any overt sense. I'm working on a musical adaptation of A Midsummer Night's Dream with composer Brian Henke. I'm working on the Goddess Veneration book.
I love him.
Oh, I'll tell him. Hey, Brian, Deborah loves you.
Yeah, he's really, really, really fun. So tell me about that. You, what is it? It's a musical adaptation?
Yeah. Because I have a lot of training in Shakespeare, and I started my writing life, my serious professional writing life, as a playwright. So we were batting around this idea, and he's already written some music for it, and I am farther behind than he is, but yeah. Working on a play.
I just learned all this cool stuff about you.
Farmer, playwright. What else?
That's really
comedian.
Good Shakespeare.
Witch, bon vivant, girl about town. Yeah, I'm 64. If I'm going to do stuff, I got to do it now. Well, I can still enjoy it and have fun with it. Speaking of which, the other gig that's come up for me is I am now writing a regular Crone column for Sage Woman magazine.
Oh.
Because it's going to be about perimenopause and menopause and what it means to be a crone. It's going to talk about not just female empowerment, but it's going to talk about how you stand in your power and wield it. You don't just say, oh, I'm powerful, I'm powerful. You just get up there and do some stuff. So that'll be fun. That's my latest writing gig.
That's good.
Yeah, I'm kind of busy, huh?
You are busy, and you do a lot of different things. It's really fun.
I get bored easily.
Well,
so I have to do a lot of things.
At...
And I know a lot of people with great ideas, and we do stuff together.
Yeah, and I will tell you that I've attended many of your workshops and your presentations, and you are an excellent presenter. So your workshops are very interesting, and you're very approachable, and yes, absolutely. And I've been in workshops with everyone for people who are just seeking and don't know much, and people who think they're all of that, and you've been very gracious and open to both sides of the of the scale, sort of. So I am
much happier with people who are teaching and nervous and inexperienced with it than I am with walking into a workshop where somebody knows everything and they're just going to flaunt that. I don't have much patience for that.
Yeah, and it was, and I forgot where it was. But you were talking, and I forgot now exactly what you were saying, but you were basically telling people, this person, it was great to read, but she probably needed to quit reading books on candle magic and touch a candle. She needed to start practicing and doing
something.
I might have said that, yes. I might have said that. It's true.
And it was honestly really gracious, and it was fun, and it was so, it was like real. I mean, it was just, and so again, you bring that kind of spirit to your presentations, and they're wonderful.
I am all about simple, practical stuff.
Yeah.
And you can get way more elaborate, way more complicated anytime you want to, but the proof of the pudding is in the eating. And so you do your work. You love your ancestors and the people around you and the divines, and you're probably going to be okay.
Things
will be hard sometimes, but, yeah, things are always hard. It's a human condition.
I'm always surprised when I teach a class or when we've had group discussions on, like, daily spiritual practice or things to do, how hungry people are because they just don't know where to start.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I have some basic things, like I'm like, you start with meditation, you start with visualization, you start with grounding. I mean, I have some like basic things that aren't really esoteric. They're just, you have to be comfortable with these things to go to the next level. And I'm always amazed at people who are so excited because sometimes I think there's too much information out there. Again, I remember a time when there wasn't very much stuff and there really wasn't the internet and it was, you know, it was less things to filter through. And sometimes I think people get kind of overloaded.
We read Laurie Cabot's book and tried our best to practice going to Alpha by pressing our fingernail into our palm. But we somehow did it. We somehow managed. I agree with you. Sometimes it's
people
just
buy all the books. They're on the internet. They're, you know, they're just so much stuff that it's hard to filter through it. So,
and they're looking for a magic bullet too. I've got this meditation I recommend to tarot clients. I recommend to anybody who goes, oh, but I can't meditate. And it's just, you light a candle, you sit down with a cup of whatever it is you drink that's warm, tea or coffee or whatever, and you just look at the candle and you sip the tea and you do that for 7 days. That's all. Seven days. And what happens when
that
you do this meditation is for the first 2 or 3 days, and you don't try to still your mind, you just let everything whirl around in your head. But all you do, your one commitment is to drink what's in the cup and look at the flame. Well, by the third day or the fourth day, what happens is all the stuff you don't need to focus on kind of settles to the bottom. And the stuff that either really interests you or that you really need to deal with, it's just right there in front of your eyes between you and the flame. And you can see it while you sip your tea. And I will tell people that, and you can just see, oh, no, I couldn't possibly do that. I mean, don't I have to say a mantra? Don't I have to chant something 1,000 times? And it's like, if you will do this simple thing for 7 days, I promise you it will work. And I have lots of people that come back to me and go, oh, I just couldn't do it. It just wasn't complicated enough. It's like, really? You couldn't sit for 5 damn minutes and drink a cup of tea?
Exactly.
Well, then you probably can't practice. You probably can't practice magic then, so don't bother.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I cannot believe an hour has flown by. You are a delightful guest. So,
oh,
have
me on again.
Oh, I will. I had such a stressful day, and so you are just so wonderful to talk to and chat, and I feel relaxed. I think I'm going to light a candle and meditate after this is over. So that actually sounds good. a cup of tea and a candle. Thank you so much. Yes, we will have you back, and we will, because we want to hear about your new book, and tell folks where they can go if they want more information or to buy your book.
Okay. You can order them from any indie bookstore. In fact, the 2 brand new ones are available for pre-order. And that's Roots, Branches, and Spirits is the one from Llewellyn. And the other one is Seasons of the Magical Life from Red Wheel Weiser. So you can order them from your local. I always recommend people go to their, if they have an independent bookstore, to go there and help them out. If you want, I don't have the 2 new ones available, but I have all my 4 or 5 other books. if they want to go to my website, which is myvillagewitch.com, and go to the shop, they can order them, and I will sign them and ship them out.
Oh.
And you can find me on Facebook all the time as Byron Ballard or as Village Witch A Wandering. I'm on Twitter and I'm on Instagram. Byron Ballard.
You are just a modern witch.
I know. Well, we've been talking about TikTok. What do you think? Should we do? Should I do TikTok or am I too old?
See, I'm not on Facebook. I'm not on anything. I am just, it is just not my thing. And so, yeah, I'm amazed that people, I know people said life is passing me by. I need to get with it. So I didn't even, I just heard about TikTok about 3 or 4 weeks ago. Some of my employees are obsessed with it. So, you know, it's a good way to get known.
It's a good way to waste some time.
I mean, I was like, I didn't get the point of it. But, yeah, but they're like, yeah, absolutely. It's the new thing. So there you go. So, yep. It, just like
the new,
Zoom,
new
we're,
thing.
Right. We're learning to communicate differently. So it's kind of interesting.
Yeah. It's good for us. It keeps our brains happy.
Well, thank you.
Okay.
Again,
well,
thank you so much.
And thanks to the silent partners back there.
Absolutely. Thank
They're
you
not gonna
all
come
for
on.
Being our sound engineer for in all that. And we'd like to thank you out there, our listeners, for your continued support of all of our shows here on Circle Sanctuary Network Podcast, or CSNP. Our next Circle Talk will be Tuesday, December 1st. In the month of December, we're going to be talking with and celebrating Circle Sanctuary's newly ordained ministers. I look forward to being with you all again, so please come back. We're now going to transition our show with a musical selection. Good night, everyone, and blessed be.
Bodies on the forest floor, the crone collects bones. Crone gathers the bones, she reads the symbols on the stones. She gathers up her herbs. You may say it is absurd, but she can cure you of your ills, so you can shake those nasty pills. She is the crone, wisdom of the crone. Wild. that woman moans can bring the flesh back to your bones. She can call your spirit home. Do not fear the wisdom of the throne.
Sanctuary website at www.circlesanctuary.org, and follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/CSN podcasts. We can also be found on your favorite podcast hosting sites such as iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and others. And until next time, many blessings.